All right. Well, you want to hear more about persecution? Last Sunday, we began a short series on this subject, and we used this passage here from 1 Peter as kind of our theme verse. So let's recall it again. If you suffer for doing good and endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. And here are the points that we covered last week, points we've covered so far. We're not going to take time this morning to review them. We might spend a couple minutes on them next week, next Sunday. But if you were absent, hopefully you either listened to the message already or you watched that service on YouTube. The next one, number six, on the points I plan to cover, deals with expectations about the near future. And here I'm thinking of like the next, between now and the next 5 years, next 10 years. A lot could be said about this, and it was actually kind of difficult to know what to address and what not to. But I ended up landing on two points that I want to go over for this morning. One, reasons it may not get really bad quite yet. And two, speculations about the types of hardships we can expect. So as you noticed last Sunday, and it will be evident again today, I tend to be a little bit more on the conservative side regarding my projections. So you can just take it for whatever it's worth here. For the near future, I don't see us losing our homes or spending time in prison or being sent away to re-education camps. It is, however, safe to say, good reasons to believe that in the next 5 to 10 years, a few of our members here might, because of their convictions to stand for righteousness, may make certain decisions that will result in the loss of their jobs. We could probably expect some members to face some stiff fines, perhaps even messy lawsuits. Many of us will get locked out of Facebook, YouTube, and so on. All of us will likely face increased shunning from people that we interact with, coworkers, neighbors, family members, people we do business with, and so on. And none of this comes as a surprise. No one's going, wow, I never thought about that. We all, you know, it's the sort of stuff that we've seen others go through here in America. We've seen a little bit of it even close up. And all of us assume that we would face it here as well sooner or later. After all, the floodwaters of this kind of oppression has been steadily rising for some time now. And so we need to be ready. We need to be informed as part of getting ready. We need to be prepared. We need to be alert. You know, if a runner knows that he's going to be competing in a marathon, he starts training for it way before the event itself. And so must we. And indeed, that's really the purpose for this series, to help us get ready for what is coming, both in the near future, with the more milder forms of persecution, and for what lies ahead down the road with the less milder forms. Now, regarding the following period of time, you know, like 10 to 15 years out, I think we could make some reasonable guesses about that based on trends we are now seeing, but they would just be guesses, and we would need to hold all of that quite loosely. And when we start talking about 20 or more years out, I think it's quite reckless to get too specific. Unless the Lord returns or intervenes in some way, it's, you know, safe to say that it's going to be, unfortunately, probably a darker time, and that things will be more intense and more difficult. But who can really say for sure? I believe the best approach is to prepare for the worst, to assume that at some point, loss of possessions, loss of homes, loss of freedom, and even loss of life could be in the cards. But attitude is everything. None of these things, possessions, homes, freedoms, our lives, that we treasure so much, none of them should capture our affections more than the Lord and His kingdom. And the only way to find peace in the prospects of a coming day of hardship and persecution is to loosen our grip on them and having a willingness to lose them at any time for the sake of our Savior. This is a major part of being ready. So if, however, you equate being ready to just that of accurately predicting what lies ahead and finding a way to get around that or beating that, well, you're no doubt going to find yourself quite unready and unprepared when the time comes. You know, buying Bitcoin now so that you can have currency to use later, as an example, is very small, in comparison to that of embracing a biblically based attitude about hardship and persecution. That is where our readiness actually begins. 40 to 50 years ago, back in the 70s, we were all convinced that the Antichrist was already here, and that behind the scenes, things were in play for him to assume his power, which generally included conspiracy theories about the United Nations, the Pope, the Illuminati, and invasions from Russia and China. How many remember this? It all seems a little bit silly now, but this was the talk all the time. We anticipated soldiers storming into our home group Bible studies and prayer meetings, concentration camps, guillotines. All of this would certainly fall before the turn of the century. There were books that fed into this, and movies, and songs sung by popular Christian artists of the time, and speakers who went from church to church stirring up the crowds. There was this big rush to memorize scripture because Bibles would soon be outlawed, gathered up, and destroyed. At that time, we never dreamed, nor could we have ever imagined, the rise of the LGBT movement, nor the power it would have to influence our culture, and that it would be this movement in particular that would prove to be our biggest threat to religious liberty. Who could have guessed? And who could really guess what sorts of threats we might face 20 or 30 years out from now? Who knows? Things we haven't even probably imagined. And so it is probably best that we don't get too caught up in the business of trying to predict everything. The speculations that we do make should not be based on fear and wild imaginations, but rather on the information that we do have on hand, like the trends we are seeing around the country and to some degree what's going around in the world. Indeed, there are things in place that make the future look pretty bleak, but there are also things in place that make the near future, look less bleak than totally bleak. Whatever the case, again, attitude really is everything. As stated last week, let us not be fearful. Let us not give in to despair. Let us realize that suffering for Christ is a calling whenever it happens, however it happens, and is something that we need to expect and accept and embrace and actually treasure. So again, if we are not being faithful even now in the opportunities we have to stand for Christ and the righteousness he proclaimed because we fear some level of even mild pushback, then we will, for sure, be totally unprepared for what lies ahead when the stakes and costs get higher. All right, so to the reasons I'm not expecting things to get really bad, not quite yet. This is the encouraging part of this series. Concentration camps and guillotines, figuratively speaking and literally, are still a long ways off, at least for us, talking about us here in this room. From now until the next 5 to 10 years, maybe even next 15, it's hard to say, I see a number of mitigating factors that should help restrain or at least slow down some of the attempts to completely demolish religious liberty in America. And generally, these factors are not taken into consideration when the subject of future persecution comes up. And religious liberty here really is the issue, because without it, we have no protection, at least from the really harsh attacks of hostility. First, there are still a lot of Christians in America. We need to realize that. Now, numbers may be dwindling, and it is hard to say how many of them have strong convictions. Difficult to know. But Christianity itself is still the dominant religion here, unlike countries in Asia and the Middle East and Africa. And this makes a full-scale attack somewhat unlikely. Most non-Christians, even among those who hate the faith, have either family members or friends who are Christians. And so while it is true that the culture is turning against us more and more, it is still hard to see any united, strong, vicious campaign against believers in the near future. We can expect ongoing attempts to oppress and harass parachurch organizations and individuals and even some churches, but a full-out frontal assault on the faith itself, like we see in some countries, I believe is unlikely. Secondly, though conservatives have been dragged through the mud in the past couple weeks, there are still a lot of political conservatives in America. And political conservatives, even those who are not Christians, support religious liberty. It's part of being a conservative. And the more who support this treasured right in our Constitution, the safer we will be, at least in theory. There's no guarantees here, but this factor does play into the equation. Thirdly, for that matter, I think it is safe to say that most Americans, even a fair percentage of liberals, are for religious liberty, at least in principle. Now, they may not like all the ways that we believe it should be applied, but arguments appealing to religious freedom still resonate with most citizens. Number four, the U.S. Constitution has not been completely dismantled yet. And while it still stands, we have in it a guaranteed right to religious liberty. Again, this affords us certain protections that many other countries don't enjoy. The Constitution will probably be scrapped at some point, but that's unlikely in the next 10 years. Number five, I think I'm on the right number. The U.S. Supreme Court tends to agree with the Constitution. Not always, but often. It's their job to agree with it, but they're supposed to agree with it. Some of their rulings on religious liberty, granted, have not been favorable, but others have been. As of now, there hasn't really been a big test case yet that will serve as the standard for all future rulings. But the favorable rulings that have been handed down so far from the court should serve as benchmarks for future ones. Number six, the current makeup of the court appears to be well positioned for religious liberty, more so than what it's been for probably 30 years. We probably are not going to get everything we want, but we will enjoy some protections from this court that would not have been enjoyed just 2 or 3 years ago. In fact, in some situations, the benefit is enjoyed well before the case reaches them. Anticipating how a conservative Supreme Court would rule would itself help restrain a good deal of aggressive legislation, for instance, that would prove to be too threatening toward religious liberty. Number seven, there continues to be efforts from our conservative legislators to advance laws protecting religious freedom. Now, with the Democrats running things now, we won't see progress of this on the federal level, setbacks as much as they can get away with it, but we might see advancements on state levels, perhaps in many states. The fact that there continues to be such efforts to introduce and champion such bills is itself encouraging. Most lawmakers would be reluctant to do so if they believed that their districts were not behind them on that. Number eight, not all of the media is radically liberal. In fact, there's a whole network of conservative radio shows and magazines and news networks and podcasts and so on. They are smaller, but they are out there. We can expect increased efforts to censor them and shut them down, but they will still find ways to promote the rights of the Constitution, including the freedom of religion. Some of these have large audiences. They are not going away. Number nine, we need to remember that we have some potential allies out there. And the word here is potential. This is all kind of unknown a little bit. But Christians do share some convictions with other religious groups. And there can be safety in numbers, especially when it comes to certain religions that are not politically correct to attack. Restrictions on religious liberty will also affect them. For instance, Muslims, and most but not all, Orthodox Jews are not especially eager to embrace the LGBT agenda or abortion on demand. They too are going to resist pressure that will be applied to them in these areas. And in a sense, we are already in the same foxhole with them. Now, there's no doubt a number of other factors I simply haven't thought of that could be added to these, and some of them have more weight than others, and maybe some of them don't influence you at all on this. But I think that there are a number of factors, positive ones, that will help slow down the armies that are marching toward us, if you will. But yet, at the same time, it may be too optimistic to think that any or all of these can stop what is inevitable. When you look at the balance balance sheet, there is certainly a lot in the less than encouraging column as well. And the reason that I'm pointing all this out, both the good and the bad, is so that our speculations are well-reasoned and informed, which in turn should help us to better prepare both for the short term and to some degree the long term as well. It is probably too early to flee to the small country of Belize in Central America. But it is not too early to stock your pantry, pay off your debt, break your addiction to Facebook, and to be thinking about how you can help fellow brothers and sisters who may be out of a job, the sorts of things that we'll be talking about next week. Now, by the way, on a side note here, you should know this. The day after Bill Clinton was elected the first time, back in November of 1992, I started the very next day planning my escape. I really did. I had every intention of fleeing to Belize. Later in this series, I'll be talking about the option of fleeing, and I'll tell that story then. But seriously, I had every intention of moving my family down there. Terry remembers this. She thought I was crazy. Still does, but for different reasons. Now, there is also a number 10 on the list of positive factors, and it concerns the bigger picture itself. The truth is on our side, and it can only be suppressed for so long. The truth always finds a way to rise above the lies. And along that line, God is on our side. He may or may not intervene, but he does care about his people and often provides protection for them or mitigates their suffering, not in every situation, but probably far more than we give him credit for or could ever realize or even speculate. Certainly, think about this. The Lord's hand was involved when the founding fathers of our nation codified religious liberty as a God-given right in the Constitution, resulting in the protection of millions of Christians over the past two centuries, as one example that we'd be inclined to overlook. So given that in the near future we probably aren't going to be killed in the public square, what then can we expect? Well, it's not really that hard to get a picture of this. What we see in Europe, for instance, usually ends up here in the U.S. on the East and West Coast, and then eventually finds its way into the rural Midwest. And since these dangerous trends and going after Christians who resist them generally do not start in politically conservative regions, it seems unlikely that anything will take us by surprise here where we live. But one can never know for sure. There could certainly be exceptions to this, but for the most part, we have an advantage of seeing ahead of time what is coming our way because of what's going on elsewhere. So let's just start with churches. To a large degree, churches really are pretty safe because they do enjoy a number of religious exemptions that have been upheld by the courts that other groups don't enjoy. In the foreseeable future, I don't look for pastors to be forced to officiate same-sex weddings or for churches to host them. That has not happened anywhere in America except with military chaplains. But chaplains are employed by the government and operate under a different set of rules. And I've looked, and I cannot find any country in the world where pastors or churches are required to accommodate same-sex weddings. And along that line, I don't look for churches to have to hire homosexual pastors or ministerial staff who don't agree with the church's statement of faith and so on. These have always been concerns, and they may be real problems that we'll have to contend with at some point, but that is probably much later on after other ground has been lost. Now, some churches, as you know, have gotten into trouble for refusing to rent an outdoor pavilion for a same-sex wedding, but that is because they did not have clear policies written up on that, about, you know, their rental policies, nor a clear statement on their beliefs about marriage. We do have written policies and a clear statement about marriage, and all this is consistently applied. As the attorneys from AADF have advised us, our documents and our policies and our practices here have to show, quote, consistently held religious beliefs about marriage and other controversial issues, and we do. Now, at some point, many churches will probably lose their tax-exempt status, as Jonathan pointed out. I think we can see this coming. That could be for a number of different reasons. One would be for failing to comply with what is often referred to as public accommodation ordinances. Any facility that is open to the public would have to conform to certain codes. Guess which codes? You know, I have actually seen blueprints of co-ed restrooms for church buildings. One big room, individual stalls, shared sinks. Compliance may be required at some point. We will not comply. We're not going to comply with that. We took a vote on this a while back. Remember that? We'll take a vote. How many think we should comply? All right. How many think that we should not comply? Let the record show. Exemption on our property taxes and sales taxes and more, they consist of huge benefits. I'm not going to deny that, amounting to thousands of dollars for us here every year and could affect our donations as well. It would be a hit if this were to ever happen. But part of being ready, as Jonathan pointed out today, for what is coming, part of being ready for what is coming is to not be dependent on that tax exemption. And we are not dependent on it. We benefit from it, but we're not dependent on it. We'll walk away from it. But by and large, overall, churches should be relatively safe, especially here in Indiana. In the near future, we might get locked out of Facebook and YouTube. The credit card company we use might drop us. Frontier might cut off our internet service. The service that hosts our website might kick us out. I mean, there's all sorts of things that could happen. That's all possible. At one time, our church, we were recipients of Amazon Smile, but then I read the fine print, and so the elders here decided to drop out of it due to all the non-discrimination rules. Rules we're just not willing to follow, and Jonathan alluded to this with Chevette. You know, the church here, we're not going to make any agreements. We will not hire a gay pastor or a transgendered pastor or a bisexual pastor or a pastor who holds to a different religious creed. Or for that matter, based on 1 Timothy 2, a woman pastor. I mean, there's lots of discrimination going on around here. Though again, by and large, the setbacks for churches seem to be relatively minor. The setbacks for churches seem to be relatively minor, at least for now. But that can't be said for parachurch organizations and Christian nonprofits. There are much more on the front lines when it comes to aggressive attacks. Just in the past couple weeks here or so, many pro-life and pro-family organizations who use online giving have been dropped by the credit card companies that process their donations. And we're going to see a lot more of this. You know, that tactic started, you might remember, with GoFundMe, who refused to accept donations for the bakers, florists, and photographers being sued by the LGBT activists and for organizations raising money for their legal defense. GoFundMe dropped all that. And now other big companies have looked at that and have adopted that tactic. And it's kind of like an ancient war strategy. You defeat your enemy by burning his wheat fields. You starve him to death. And that's what's going on here. And once the Southern Poverty Law Center tags a charitable organization as a hate group, well, that almost spells certain doom. And it's pretty easy to qualify as a hate group. All you have to do is claim that gays and lesbians can suppress their desires and don't have to act on them. That's all it takes. And then there are professional counselors and schools and adoption agencies and others who are also primary targets. Much could be said here. It is somewhat likely that our own Tom Detmer will lose his license, perhaps face heavy fines for helping for offering to help certain patients who want to overcome their same-sex desires, or for trying to help someone straighten out their gender identity issues. This is already illegal in many states with minors. In fact, we have an Indiana senator, John Ford, who just this past week introduced a bill that would result in the loss of a license for any counselor who helped a minor with such problems. And there is a push across the country to apply this limitation on counseling to adults as well. And then there are business owners. I mean, John Nelson could face heavy fines, even a lawsuit, for refusing to let men use the women's restroom in his bowling alley. And this is eventually going to be the standard policy across the land. Even Christian schools might at some point be forced to let boys shower with the girls after gym class. All a guy has to do is claim that he is really a girl trapped in a body that is cursed with boy body parts. And at that point, nothing can be done. The courts will stand behind him. Lynn Wegman could get into trouble for not checking the marriage box on a life insurance policy he sells to a lesbian couple. Probably not many lesbian couples in Woodburn, but might be in the coming years. Christina could be vulnerable in a number of ways. Someday she might be pressured to sign some agreement that requires doctors to recognize elective abortions as a valid medical option and might be required to perform them or assist in one. And there are, as you know, ongoing attempts to undermine the freedom of conscience provisions for doctors and medical workers. She's bound to get snagged in one of those at some point. For that matter, any employee here may face severe repercussions, possibly termination of employment, for creating a hostile work environment when refusing to use politically correct pronouns, pronouns that are actually lies. Whatever the case, given the new president and the people he is placing in the various offices, not to mention the judges he will be picking and the state of the culture itself, well, the zeal against many of God's righteous decrees will certainly increase, along with the efforts to force all of us to jump on board. And the left, as you know, has certainly been emboldened in recent weeks. Now, a number of us here have been reading the book Live Not by Lies, and it compares hard totalitarianism, what took place under communist Russia, and it being enforced by the heavy hand of the government, to soft totalitarianism, what is taking place now here in America, where everyone is being pressured, not so much by the government, but by the culture itself. And totalitarianism is simply a system that exercises total control over both public and private life, either by military might or financial pressure, peer pressure, you know, so on, whatever it takes. Whatever the means is used, the goal is to force everyone to subscribe to the same values, the same convictions, the same worldview, the same politics, the same ideals, and so on. And so this also means that there is no tolerance for dissent or opposition of any kind. The book is interesting. It shows that the trends that led to this in Russia are present with us now here in America. At some point, the reasoning follows, we will see increased efforts to ban the book that is the most responsible for dissent. And what book is that? The Bible. We can expect it to be removed from schools, universities, libraries, courtrooms, and other facilities that receive government funding. There will be pressure on bookstores to drop it and for motels to remove them. All of this may be a little hard to pull off because of the factors I mentioned earlier and because of the Bible's continued popularity. But I think that we will see some pretty robust efforts along these lines nonetheless. Hard to say whether it will be successful or not. You know, for instance, had the sales not been so profitable for Amazon, they would have pulled it by now, for sure. But they can't do that because they make too much money off the sales of it. If church denominations keep on apologizing for their various histories of opposing homosexual practices, then they will at some point have to throw their Bibles in the trash just to be consistent with their rhetoric. Whatever the case, many of the speculations about the next few years don't require a whole lot of imagination. We will lose our memberships in the clubs of the cool and trendy. We're going to be kicked out of those. We will be thought of as backward and pig-headed and irrelevant and even hateful. People we admire, people we like, people we want to be accepted by, won't. There will be certain privileges, perks, opportunities that we could take advantage of, opportunities we could really benefit from, but won't because of the fine print we would have to agree to. We will find ourselves in conflicts with Amazon, Google, Facebook, Apple, PayPal, our banks, our credit card companies, and so much more. You know, how much longer will it be when we won't be able to buy or sell without surrendering our souls to the beast? So next week, we're going to talk about how to prepare for what lies ahead and how to survive it when we find ourselves in the thick of it. We'll try to do that the best we can. And for today, I'll close with these words. You've heard them before. It's probably been a few years or so, and they seem to be quite fitting. It is likely that I will die in my bed. My successor will die in prison. His successor will die executed in the public square. His successor will pick up the shards of a ruined society and slowly rebuild civilization as the church has done so often in human history. And that was given by Roman Catholic Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, who died 6 years ago. So let me say again, as I did last week, and I'll be repeating this over and over in this series, our response to what appears to be a troublesome picture of persecution, our response should not be fear or despair, but rather of understanding, preparation, you know, getting our priorities in order, and training ourselves even now to be strong. To this we were called, to suffer for our Savior, for His truth, for His kingdom, for His righteousness, and for His name. And it is something that we should expect, something that we should embrace, endure, and even treasure. Amen? Hey, Josh, you want to come and close?